Hello, everybody, and welcome to Comedy Death Star, the podcast that digs into the dark side of comedy. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Our guest this week is Camilla Cleese.
Hello.
Stand-up comedian, writer, and former professional equestrian.
Yes.
I practice this because if you say former professional equestrian, it's a tongue twister.
It is a little bit.
Yeah.
That's why I just write that.
You just write it. Yeah, that's better.
If I say it in conversation, I say I used to ride horses professionally.
That makes much more sense. We will hear all about that in a moment. But first, a message from our corporate overlords. Comedy Death Star is a production of Actors Comedy Studio and ACSDigital.tv. I'm Denzel Myers. Our guest today is Camilla Cleese. Hello, Camilla.
Hello.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
What's going on for you? Where have you been? You've been traveling.
Oh, yeah.
I was a lot of places.
On tour in Australia for a month, which was awesome.
Yeah.
And we spent a couple of weeks in Sydney casting. They're doing a theatrical production of Fawlty Towers. I don't know if you know that show, but
yeah,
one of my dads.
Fawlty Towers. Yeah.
And I think it's going to be hysterical, but we were casting that, which was fascinating because I've never been on that side of the casting process before.
Normally, I'm the one auditioning.
And it was really interesting to watch. I mean, I felt bad for them because I wouldn't want to audition to play the role that my dad played in front of my dad.
I would find that a little intimidating.
At one point, I threw a napkin over his head when someone walked in just to, like, ease the tension because I could tell she was nervous. I was like, he's not here. Just
don't worry about
pretend.
It.
Pretend, yeah.
Now you make me think, you remember that Seinfeld episode where they're finally making their show and they have auditions for them? Did you ever see that episode?
A long time ago, but yeah.
Yeah, and all the people come in doing Kramer, and all the people come in doing George. So I imagine
That was a big thing. It was really fascinating because we were looking for someone who played the roles well but brought something new to it so that they're not just mimicking what my dad did or what Connie Booth did or what Pernilla Skels did.
Because that show is super popular, maybe not in this country,
huge.
But
it's not well known
in
here,
the English-speaking world
and
in Australia.
All the other English-speaking countries, it's syndicated, so people of all generations know it. And I think it's easy, especially if you've watched it a lot, to get caught in that trap. Because I found myself, I was reading with people, and I was like, I'm not going to be like those casting directors who give you a flat reading. So I did an English accent and I, did the whole thing. But I found myself getting caught in cadences that I know were used in that show, because you just, when you've heard it, you hear it in your head like that. But we found there were some great actors out there. It was really impressive.
So that show is definitely happening.
Yes.
So it's a television series, not a movie.
No, it's a theater tour.
A theater tour.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So, I also was helping my dad out with the script, and they combined, I think, three or four of the episodes into the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it translates really well because it's kind of an intimate show. There's not too many characters. Well, that was the other.
Well, it was done as live TV, right? Which is.
Was it
done live? It was done in front of a live audience. I'm pretty sure.
I think you're right.
So that's basically a theatrical production with cameras there anyway. The way that it's staged and the way the set is small and contained.
And not a lot of characters. Although, for the sake of the budget and a touring production, that was the other difficulty casting is you had to cast everyone so that they could understudy other people and play multiple roles, and that makes it tenfold more challenging. But we found really great people and a great, amazing Basil, but who brings something very different to it. And he's a redhead, which I think is good.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, because automatically people aren't going to compare him as much, I think, because of the physical differences.
Yeah,
still very tall, but
that's good. Now, you mentioned your dad a couple times, and I know I always get this wrong, so I'm not even going to try. Your dad is one of the Beatles, and I always forget which one.
I wish. That would be cool.
That would be cool, right?
His name is Bernie Mac.
Yeah, see? See, now that he's the fifth Beatle, Bernie Mac.
Right.
A lot of people don't know that they had this black guy, mm-hmm. right, who was there and played keyboards as the fifth Beatle, and he's not, you know, I mean, but yeah.
Yeah, well, I know, cool. We don't look alike, but...
Well, a lot of parents and kids, you know. Dogs and parents, that's different, but kids, they go their own way. Yeah. Bernie
no.
Mac.
John Cleese is my dad.
Oh.
I know, I ruined it.
No, he
did you
it.
Know, though, that the Beatles actually, I think it was maybe just George Harrison, but put the money up for my dad's first movie with the Python guys, Monty Python?
I did
Python
not know that. Wait a minute, that sounds vaguely familiar. No, but I didn't know that. I don't think so.
I did not know that till I was about 25, and I was like, Dad, why didn't you tell me? I would have thought you were so much cooler yeah. and given you so much more respect yeah. all these years.
Instead of thinking that you're kind of a dad.
No, I mean, I thought that was incredible. I've actually accidentally met all three of, you know, well,
living.
I realize George is now passed, but yes. Him, Paul, and Ringo.
Oh, right.
Randomly. When I met Ringo, I thought it was someone doing a bad impression of Ringo, though. Which
Ringo is a bad impression of Ringo.
Yeah.
I saw this interview with him. It's an old interview, but some, you know, some darky DJ guy in England was asking him all these technical questions about his drumming because the way that he puts a combination together is super different and other people have a hard time imitating it. And, you know, the guy... very knowledgeable. He said, you know, how did you do that? And why did it work this way? And how come nobody else can do it? And Ringo says, I'm actually left-handed, but my grandmother hated it that I was left-handed, so she made me do everything right-handed. And so as I learned how to play the drums, it was wrong.
Right.
And that's why I did these things that nobody else can copy.
Oh, fascinating.
I'm like, yeah, that's Ringo. That's Ringo. You try to make something cool out of it. And he's like, no, I got beat up as a kid. And, you know, that's why.
Yeah. Was he like, next time, lie?
No, the guy was obviously disappointed and wished that it was, you know, some kind of cool answer. But it was...
Well, sometimes those things come... I mean, I think those deficits... Or not deficits, but like... The
compensations.
Perceived, yeah, the yeah, compensations something. Can lead to extra creativity. And yeah. I mean, I know in the, what was it, Monty Python Holy Grail, the reason they used coconuts is because they couldn't afford horses.
They couldn't afford horses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
that's not one
I mean,
of people's
priceless.
Favorite.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I asked for a pony for Christmas every year. Do you know how many coconuts I got?
You got
like,
coconuts every year.
till I was 15, yeah.
And you're like, Jesus, I don't want more coconuts.
No.
No.
And then I got I did get a horse at 15, and it died 2 weeks later, which was really sad. Anyway.
That is really
morbid.
Sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just freak
well,
accident.
I did have a question about being a former professional equestrian. Yeah, how do I make fun of that? How do we, you know, how do we get some... But your horse died 2 weeks later. That's kind of funny.
I mean, you have a sick sense of humor...
Well, now.
Sure. Yeah. No, I mean, it was after that many years of asking for one, yeah. I think.
That's actually brutal.
Yeah,
ten,
it was...
10 years of asking for a
something.
Pony, and you get one, and then died 2 weeks later.
Yeah. Which, actually, they told me, because you have to try a horse out to see if you click with it.
Yes.
So I already knew I was getting the horse, but when it died, it was actually Christmas Day, which was, you know, he colicked, which usually wouldn't be a big deal, but because it was Christmas Day, there weren't people around the barn, and they didn't catch it until kind of too late, which was really sad. I did wind up getting a few more over the years, but we had kind of a sales business. But
yeah, I don't
funny,
know how to make,
it is a funny. It's a weird sport. It's really
is
weird.
It a weird? What's weird about
well
equestrianism?
It
is that
didn't
the right
occur
word?
To me.
Equestrianism?
I don't know. Because we don't really call it equestrian. We're like we ride horses.
Yeah,
but
of course.
When you're talking to someone who's not in that world. If you don't say that, then they think maybe like barrel racing, which is it's sort of like figure skating and ice hockey. You know,
yeah, barrel racing is like rodeo clowns.
There's one common vehicle, and that's about it.
Yeah,
I actually found that out kind of the hard way. I got hired to, I was doing some hosting for a network called RFD, which stands for Rural Farm Delivery. And lovely people.
Super sexy. The RFD network.
Yeah. Hosting some rodeo stuff. And it, I realized, like, I don't know damn thing about barrel racing, bronc. I mean, it's like, we don't even call the gates the same things. So right. It was a learning curve. But fun. But all the cowboys are tiny, too, which they did not appreciate me when they were standing on a hay bale next to me, because I'm 6'1".
You're twice as tall as... So cowboys, like rodeo cowboys, are tiny.
Mm-hmm.
And that just makes it easy, more mobile? I mean, is there...
I would think because you can be... Like, if you're on... It's mostly the bull riders and stuff that are tiny.
Okay.
And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that, like, the bull, when it's bucking, the levers, like, if the taller you are, the more difficult it would be to stay on, because although you have longer legs, the momentum that you build from being my height, and also you're kind of more gymnastic, like, you probably have a much higher chance of landing on your feet should you get bucked off.
All right. I just never thought about
I never really thought about it. Why, either? Jockeys are the same, but then show jumping, it helps to be tall and slender, actually, strangely. For opposite reasons. Like,
for the act, because you need the...
Well, you need the legs. I mean, it helps to have legs to hold on to, but also being tall enables you to be stronger without being as muscular.
Okay.
Like, so you're lighter because you can use the leverage from your upper body to slow down rather than... And you can use more precise adjustments, I suppose, because you have more range. I don't know if that makes sense, but...
Kind of. I'm trying to translate that into riding motorcycles, and, you know, some of it... Yeah, some of it works, actually, but...
Well...
Anyway, all right.
Yeah, I mean, you... like, if you're... If you want to slow down and you pull with just your arms... You're not going to have a ton of strength, but if you lean your upper body back, that gives you a lot more. And the taller you are, obviously, the more
leverage you get.
Yeah, strength you can create.
Well, we got off the thing. You were in Australia.
Yes.
And the reason you went there is to do stand-up. I mean, that was the main reason you were there.
Well, not exactly. It was a little bit complicated. We went to cast the show, and then my dad was doing a tour with Eric, and he needed or wanted... help writing his next one-man show. So I went over there to assist him with that, but then we were supposed to do it in the 2 weeks while we cast the show. Didn't even start. So he asked me to stay on and go on tour with them, and the promoters of the Australian tour, the first show I ever did, which wasn't stand-up, it was just like comedy with my dad, they were the promoters, so I've known them for years. So they booked my own, like, kind of stand-up tour. So I was competing with them, basically. I was like, hey, if you don't sell out tonight, it's because 30 people to see me.
can't get in. Yeah.
Which, they sold out pretty much every night.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard that's been
super. But it was really fun. It was cool to...
Yeah.
I actually haven't spent much time with Eric since I was a kid, and it was fun to kind of revisit. And
yeah.
It really was a flying circus. I mean, we were flying every other day, you know, and the two of them in an airport, it's like having drunk toddlers. Neither of them really drink much, but they just wander off and
And they're silly
things.
Together, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Misbehaving.
I love that story. I read it some on your site, probably, that they said when you were a kid and you and your dad would drive around, that you would stop at a bathroom or a fast food place and you would run in ahead of time.
Oh, yeah.
And tell people to, when he comes in, to shout out, aren't you the guy from Pink Panther 2?
Yeah. Because there's
that
certain,
made me laugh really hard.
I mean, my dad's done some really great work. We were actually, we took a road trip to Sundance 1 year. And, you know, we had so much fun, but he's an older guy, and we stopped to use the restroom a lot, like every 30 minutes. And, you know, So every place I took it as an opportunity to, like, we messed with each other.
To fuck
constantly.
With them.
Yeah,
yeah, totally.
Oh, that's
yeah.
like what I live for.
That's all
basically.
You got with a parent.
Yeah. yeah. So the whole way there, I did that. And by the time we got there, he was so pissed off. He was like, oh, all these people in Utah, they just recognize me from Pink Panther 2. And I was like, I mean, I don't think they recognized him, period, which he probably would prefer. Because I don't think Pink Panther 2 was one of his prouder moments.
Honestly, I didn't even know he was in Pink Panther 2.
Neither.
I was laughing because I thought that you tried to convince people that he was Peter Sellers, which is even funnier to me.
Right.
But, yeah.
Well, he worked with Peter and, you know, loved Peter
Sellers. I didn't get the joke.
Well, no, he was in the one with Beyonce, who he was like, who is Beyonce? And I was like, no, Dad.
Wait, she was in Pink Panther 2?
Yeah. This was a while. It was about 10 years ago, I think.
No, I didn't see those. I saw the old ones.
No.
That's why, yeah, I didn't even...
You're not
I didn't even know what Pink Panther 2 was.
I just enjoy messing, you know.
You just mess with... Yeah, you mess with your parent. But you seem to really love stand-up. I keep asking questions. You've been doing a lot of that.
I have. I do love it. It's really fun, and I love that, you know, you can write something that day and then get instant feedback on whether it's funny or not. That's priceless, and it helps, you know, when I'm writing anything within reason, I can figure out ways to test it out in my stand-up. I love that instant gratification. It's also the most horrific, brutal, and masochistic thing you can do with your life, I think.
Oh, yes.
It's, yeah. like, I mean, being able to make people laugh is such a blessing and amazing to do on a daily basis, but when it doesn't go well, it's like the most depressing and demoralizing feeling in the world, I feel like.
I think you have both of those. I mean, even when it goes well, there are moments and it's hard, and
I'm super hard on myself. Unless it's like nonstop laughter, I'm like, what did I do wrong? Right. You know?
What is it about comedians that we do this? Because it is, it's brutal. Right? When other people, civilians, say, oh, you're doing stand-up comedy. How awesome, how much fun that must be. And I say, no, it's the most difficult.
It is.
Brutal is the great
word.
Well,
they do say the general public, the number one fear of the general public is public speaking.
Yeah.
And the number two fear is death.
Yeah.
So if you think about that and then think about the fact that stand-up comedy is public speaking only, you're expected to make them laugh, which instantly puts a huge amount of pressure on you. Like, public speaking, if no one laughs, you haven't failed.
Right.
You know, you haven't done great,
district
but you
attorney
haven't failed.
And you say we arrested this guy, nobody's... Yeah.
Yeah. Martin Luther King probably didn't get a ton of laughs.
Not a ton of laughs.
But was he an incredibly powerful and charismatic speaker? Absolutely. but instantly, you've got a crowd of people sitting there with their arms crossed, like, all right, make me laugh. And especially as a woman, unfortunately, that stigma still exists. And you feel that when you walk on stage.
It makes it harder for you? Or what's the stigma?
That women aren't funny. Huh. And it's crazy that still exists with the amount of successful and talented female comedians as of late. But it's very much a boys' club. And it's... Yeah. You know, people are like, there aren't many funny female comics. And I'm like, well, yeah, there aren't many female comics. Like, if you take the entire population of comedians and took the percentage of the men that are funny versus the women that are funny, it would probably be exactly the same.
Right.
But there are probably 5% female versus 95% male.
Right. Really? 5 to 95? I mean... I think I just don't...
I could be wrong. But that's what it feels like.
That's what it feels like.
I mean, after a certain point, there's a lot of people in LA, like, in the first year of stand-up, I would say it's more like 70-30. Mm-hmm. But a lot of girls, and, I mean, I almost quit a few times. Like, it's rough. You're getting... it's like a breeding ground for misogyny. And you have to be able to deal with that and having bad sets on stage in front of people. Because it's more like the stuff that happens between the comics and the, you know, the when you're not on stage right. that I think is hard to deal with. And I think a lot of them quit for that reason.
So, you see, this is the thing that I don't see. You right. know what I mean? That's why I'm interested in the topic, because I go out there and I'm focused because I'm freaking out about my own stuff. And, yeah, there are women around, and I know some of them. Yeah, they don't necessarily talk about it on stage or...
Well, you can't, because if you do, you're just an angry woman who's right. been scorned or desperate, or you get all these labels, right?
Right. Like, that makes it less funny. Yeah, then you...
Right,
yeah.
And then people don't like you for that reason. Right. I mean, it's kind of fascinating, because you can't beat up on men, because it just makes you sound like a bitter, like, desperate woman.
Right, right.
Whereas if you pick on men... I have a stand-up bit where I do exactly that. And it's funny because I start by kind of roasting women a little bit. Like, I do a whole thing where I'm like, you know, I'm really into women's rights lately. I think it's really important. As a woman, I fight for my right to stay at home and not work. I mostly do that by staying at home and not working. Like, also our right to work, just sure. only if we want to.
Yeah.
And I go into equal pay and say that, you know, I got to be honest, there's certain jobs that I think are better suited for one sex or another, which I do believe to be true. But I say, you know, a couple of examples for women, and people are laughing. And then I'm like, and, you know, there's certain jobs I don't think men are really well suited for, like anything that requires empathy, which does sound a little bitter, but it'll be like,
silence,
you just feel
crickets.
It. And it's, I don't mind, because I can then make fun of them for getting so sensitive.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, men have feelings? What?
What?
but it's really interesting that you can't do that. You would think it would be the opposite, but it's like, people, women, I think, are so used to hearing the sort of laughing at themselves or being made fun of by men that
right.
when it's the tables are turned, they're not as cool with it at
yeah.
all.
No, I mean...
And I'm saying it jokingly, you know, but it's like...
Well, I can buy, you know, on a certain level, we laugh at comics. The comics... reveal themselves, right? And we reveal ourselves as flawed, and so that's what people laugh at.
Right.
You know, we laugh at ourselves, and people can do that. But I can also see that if you have, like, a loud, obnoxious guy like Andrew Dice Clay, you know, his character's a total asshole.
Right.
He's got a new show. It's still him. But, you know, we are laughing at that character
mm-hmm.
and how much of a dick he is, because we know, but I don't think a woman can get away with being that same kind of offensive character. I agree with you. I think it's challenging.
I think it is more so. I mean, yeah. Chelsea does it pretty well, and Natasha Leggero, who plays uh-huh. his girlfriend on that show, yeah. I think is great, and she does something really interesting in her stand-up, because she can be a bit of a sort of mean girl.
Yeah.
But you still like her, which that scares me to even try. Like, I am very self-deprecating at the top, because I feel like once you have them on board because you're making fun of yourself, then you have a lot more leeway of where you can go.
Right, right.
If I don't do self-deprecating stuff at the top, I have a hard time. Like, I've done it that way, but people are much more hesitant. I don't consider myself a mean comic, but, like,
I do
dark
so.
Material,
yeah.
and I don't know how much of it I put online, because I've learned the hard way that you don't really need to put anything up that's going to just invite... I already have a hate campaign against me, which is a whole nother story.
Shall we talk about that? Is it interesting?
It's kind of funny. I don't know if you've seen the bit I do about why I don't date short guys.
No.
Basically, I'm like, look.
You're tall. Is it
yeah, I mean, I'm tall, and
that?
I talk about, like, the difficulties. Like, it's difficult to have to kiss and have sex at the same time because of the torso length difference, and I do kind of act out, and I say how I can never fall asleep after because I feel like what I imagine parents feel like when they have a newborn in bed.
Yes.
If I roll over wrong, I'm going to crush him, and he'll die, and I'll go to jail. This isn't worth it. And then I'm like, but also, you know, I think it's better because guys under 5'8" are responsible for most of the misery in the world. Which I realize.
You mean like Napoleon?
Yeah,
Hitler,
I'm like, look at all the dictators. Yeah, I mean, history proves it. Yeah. Napoleon, Hitler, Genghis Khan, Stalin.
I think
Stalin.
Idi Amin was tall. Wasn't Stalin kind of a tall guy? Short.
I did a lot of research for this bit.
Because
Genghis Khan.
Really?
Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Is one of the. Justin Bieber. And,
but see, now Genghis Khan and who was the other guy we just mentioned? Stalin. With the mustache that you always see, and they kind of shoot them from below. You know, it makes it look like they're taller,
right,
and bigger. And I just didn't know that Stalin was a little guy.
The fact is, you know, 100 years ago, everyone was shorter. And I realize that. Like, look, the reason that I do the bit is because I rattle off. You know, look at all the dictators: Napoleon, Hitler, Genghis Khan, Stalin. Tom Cruise, yep. Justin Bieber, Oscar Pistorius, who never killed anyone until he was under 5'8".
Right.
Which is...
That's bad.
But I love that. He's a murderer. Yeah. We can make fun of him.
When he had his... Yeah, fully legged, he was fine.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, see, maybe that's what
so I mostly do it because I love that line, but there's a support group for short men online who really got upset. Oh, and I also list babies. I'm like, tiny little terrorists, you know. It's so silly.
Are they like a global group? Where are they?
I don't know.
US,
they're online, UK? But they troll the shit out of me.
I'm so sorry.
And it's funny because I won't engage. The only thing I'll ever do, I won't respond, but like... If they write something particularly personal and biting, I'll retweet it with, like, those laughing, crying faces. Just because I do... I mean, they go, like, it's a little creepy.
No, people go after you because of the anonymity and they don't care. And you're kind of a public figure-ish, you know, now more
even before
than
I did comedy, I was getting it. So it's, like, whatever. But... all these strangers started coming to my defense, which was the best part because they'd be like... responding, be a big boy.
That's funny.
Or stop being a troll, which literally means, you know,
a short
it's,
kind of, that's terrible. All right, let's change the question. Anyway. Let me, here's just another question. What irritates you? What?
Stupid people.
Stupid.
I mean, I don't claim to be that smart, but LA is. Something else. It's like full of all these insecure, narcissistic people, you know, with a chip on their shoulder, and it can be hard living here sometimes.
Yeah.
But
so all those cliches that people hear about LA, there's a reason that they're partly
true.
I
would say so. I have a theory about it, which I think, you know, there's a reason people generally move to LA, and it's because a lot of times maybe they were like the hottest thing in their small town in Kansas, and then they get here,
or the funniest kid in high school,
and and everyone said, oh, you're gonna be a star. Like, a lot of them never even acted before. They just see that as the shortcut to being rich and famous, and so they move here thinking, oh, this will be easy. Or maybe they've heard it's difficult, but they have no concept of how difficult, and then realize that they're a dime a fucking dozen, and there's a million people better and prettier and more experienced than them, and they sort of have this entitlement, like they should have been handed stardom, and they don't really want to work for it, but they're, you know, it's a really weird, mean, like, there's a lot of just shit talking and gossip and stuff. It's very like high schoolish.
I was gonna say, I think that's also true amongst younger people than older people, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if people like that come here, they spend a few years here, it's not gonna be what they were hoping or expecting, and a lot of them leave, and that's fine.
Yeah.
You know? And the people who stay
stay that ruin it.
Like, to work hard.
I feel like there should be an expiration date on aspirations. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Like, you get this amount of time, and if you haven't become SAG yet, you have to leave.
You have,
like,
to get the hell out of town.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Or something, you know, if you haven't ever been paid to act in anything.
The thing that I don't understand is when people say, yes, let's get together, and they know that that's never going to happen.
Right.
Or they even say, yeah, let's meet to do the thing, and then, it gets rescheduled, and then it gets rescheduled, and then it gets rescheduled, and then they just, like, float away. And, you know, I'm from Philadelphia. If you don't want to meet with me, I would rather you just say, like, no, I can't help you.
Right.
Or, no, I don't give a shit, whatever your show you're pitching. You know, honestly, I don't have time for that. That would be totally fine with me. But that other thing of making plans and then bailing on,
it's
flaking
kind of
on
like
them.
Entitlement in a weird way. It's like, my time is more important. But I
don't know. I don't know why. I have no idea why.
It is frustrating. The one thing I will say, though, is the nature of our business is so unpredictable.
Yeah.
Like, I do, but I warn people. I'm like, look, you know, if they're not in this industry, and like if we make plans 2 weeks from now, let's touch base 2 days ahead of time.
Sure.
Because things change like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
I have things pop up and then get canceled, and it's like,
well, we've rescheduled this 2 or 3 times,
right,
or something.
Sorry about that.
No, that's totally fine.
Which, but I've always wanted to come in and do,
yeah,
it, and I.
But there were reasons
I
that you
wound
did
up
that.
Staying on in Australia, yeah, was the last time.
Yeah.
And
that's a good reason. I'm in another,
yeah,
continent.
Right.
Yeah, that's totally
gonna be
a good
tricky.
Reason. Yeah.
Unless you Skype me in. But I think a lot of people just aren't that considerate anymore. And I think it's changed with cell phones a lot, because it used to be if you made plans to meet someone somewhere, you had to show up because there was no way of contacting them
that's
10
true.
Minutes beforehand.
That's true.
And saying, I'm not going to be there.
That's
you
true.
Know? And that's kind of dangerous because it's made it very relaxed. And
now you get to the place and you're waiting at the restaurant, and 10 minutes later,
yeah,
10 minutes after the time, you get a message saying, oh man, you know, something,
yeah,
something.
Something popped,
you know,
up.
Whatever. Yeah. Any fears? Do you have any...
heights, ironically.
You're afraid of heights?
Yeah.
Is it kind of a phobic thing or just a little bit freaky?
I fell off a cliff.
Uh-huh.
I was teaching skiing in Jackson Hole, Wyoming for a while. Actually, this was before I taught there, and I would drop little drops, but not... I didn't have any idea that this cliff was there, and I was just flying along and suddenly tried to stop... didn't stop in time, and it was one of those horrible, felt like time slowed down, and you,
yeah,
know, my skis are chattering against the rock face as I slide towards it, and one ski popped off, and I was just like, oh no, here we go. But I got lucky because it was a pretty high drop. I think about 25
pretty
feet,
pretty good, yeah,
far enough. I broke my patella, but that was it. Everything else was, I mean, I was sore, banged,
yes,
up, but God, the ski patrol, they put you in that toboggan thing and tow,
right,
you down. That does not help because
it's all bumpy and moguly.
It's so
and,
bumpy,
yeah,
when you're not standing.
And they don't have the St. Bernard anymore that gives you a shot of rum. So that,
no,
the old days, that really,
I
helped
think I'd
out.
Had enough rum already.
Okay.
Which is part of the problem.
That was part of the problem.
That I missed the warning cliff area sign. That and bears.
Bears? So heights, fear of heights, which, you know, that...
Yeah.
I think there's a good reason for that, so it's not exactly like... what's the bear thing?
I did have a face-to-face encounter with a bear, mm-hmm, when I was about 11, but I don't know how much real danger I was ever in, but I've just... That, and we had, like, a home theater kind of thing, like a room where the TV could only be controlled from a remote, and my brother used to lock me in there with the movie The Edge... playing. Do you know that movie with,
no,
Gene Hackman and I think Benicio del Toro? It's got
scary.
It's basically about a grizzly bear stalking a guy through the woods. It's horrific. It's like that one scene from The Revenant,
yeah,
just,
yeah,
for 2 hours, basically.
Now, this is what family does. I had a guy on last week, a couple weeks ago, and his phobia is balloons.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, laugh, because I'm laughing, he's laughing, but from when he was a little kid, he has had a phobic thing about balloons popping. And when they squeak, like the next step is popping, and it just, the whole thing freaks him out, but even seeing balloons. And he said that as a kid, his family would do it purposefully. They would bring home balloons, they would pop them, they would, you,
yeah,
know, just to fuck with him. Like your brother knew you had a thing about bears, so he would...
Well, that was even before, I think.
So your brother was hoping,
you know,
you would
I'm
have
afraid
a thing
of
bears.
Sharks too, because he was one of my stepbrothers, who I call my brothers because I grew up with them.
Yeah.
He was a really good free diver. Like could hold his breath for about 2.5-3 minutes, and I'd be swimming in the ocean, and he'd come up and grab my ankle and pull me under, which, if you don't see them coming, is terrifying.
Yeah.
Like, as a kid.
Well, as an adult, too.
Yeah.
It's kind of,
and
God,
I had a good friend who had a phobia of ketchup, though, which I was like, oh, she can't be serious. But I remember I was chasing around the house with a bottle of ketchup because, you know, it was just, she was asking for
it. Yeah, you're totally asking
for that. Plus, she had a kid when we were in high school. So it's very difficult to avoid ketchup when you have, like, a five-year-old. Or he wasn't five in high school, but she had him junior year. But I didn't think it was like a real thing until I started chasing around and she started crying and I was like, oh my God.
You're really afraid of ketchup? Come on.
That's so funny.
I wonder if there's a name for that, because I looked up, there is an actual name for a phobia of balloons, globophobia, but now I'm curious if there is, if it's been named for ketchup, if there's really a ketchup phobic, an official.
I'm sure there probably is.
We're going to have to check that out. If anybody listening
has a ketchup phobia,
and or wants to look it up, then let us know. How many stepbrothers or siblings do you have?
I've lost count, I think. Because when your parents get divorced, they're always like, well, you don't divorce brothers and sisters. Right. And I'm like, that's funny because I didn't marry them in the first place. But I think there's like 12... half step and X step,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah,
yeah. This past holiday season, you know, we're like, well, are these people family, or like, who is exactly the family in this situation?
Yeah,
and who's not really family?
It gets expensive, especially. It's really unfair because I'm the youngest, and I'm the one of the few that doesn't have kids, and that's where it gets expensive, you know. But I have a good deal on my mom's side. My stepdad has three daughters who are awesome. I got super lucky on that side. And so we do like a secret Santa thing.
Yeah.
Or just buy gifts for the kids and skip, because I don't care. I mean, Christmas is like not a thing really for me.
I don't need gifts and stuff.
Really. But yeah, and I tend to be on my own for Christmas, right. So
it's easy. At my aunt's house this past year, we decided, look, if we're hanging out together and we don't really like each other, we're family.
Right.
That's the definition of family. We're there. We don't really like each other.
It's just tricky. My dad's always in England or the Caribbean. And as a comic, you tend to work every day. There's no real holidays.
Right.
Like, actually, Christmas is a busy time generally. Yep. So unless I want to fly 11 hours for, like, 3 days. I did go meet him for 10 days this past year, but I planned it 6 months out.
Right. Let's switch something up. Sure. One of the things I like to do on this show is to anagram.
Oh, I love anagrams.
Because I find sometimes that when you anagram somebody's name or something, you know,
I do it a lot.
You do? Yeah. It sometimes reveals other meanings or adds something. So with you, I don't know what I got really. I anagrammed your name. There are a few things.
There's not a lot. Some names are tough.
Yeah.
I sell Ace Camel.
Yeah.
It's funny. Did you know that mother-in-law is an anagram of woman Hitler?
No, that's good. What else you got? That's a good one.
Clint Eastwood there has a funny one that's like,
mother-in-law, woman, Hitler. Yeah, I think I may have heard that. That sounds familiar now. Yeah.
Clint Eastwood, you can get like old Western, Wild Western, or there. That's not it.
But there's a C in there, so it can't be Wild Western. But we can do it real fast.
I can't.
You're not going to remember. So yeah, Camilla Cleese, you must have done that. Yeah, not much. What about equestrian? Any of those
useful? Ear inquest. Sequin tier.
Well, I wasn't sure
if Saint Queer is funny because it is
Saint Queer.
There are a lot of lovely gay men.
A lot of homos.
A lot of homos in
the equestrian world.
Yes. Star Equine is good.
Star
Equine. A Rain Quest is good, too.
Right, and rain is the reins that you pull, not the reins that come down from the sky, right? A Rain Quest, I thought that one kind of made sense.
Sane Requit. That's...
I wasn't sure what that one was.
I know, some of them are funny like that.
No, there's a lot of them. So, anyway.
There were some funny ones for the politicians recently.
What? Star Equine. Yeah, that's not bad. Yeah, and then I wasn't sure whether this was Sequin Tear or Sequin Tear.
I think Sequin Tear is funny. Tear. It's like what a harlequin would have on its cheek.
Yes. Yeah, and okay.
Maybe. I don't know.
Tan Esquire. I thought that could be a nice name for a horse.
There was a good horse named Esquire.
I'm sure.
I mean, they've all got those funny names.
Yeah, they all have... all right, so the anagram thing. Now, how did you get into anagramming? You just...
I've always liked wordplay. My dad, growing up, we played a lot of Scrabble, Boggle.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Crosswords. He taught me to do cryptic crosswords and stuff, and there's a lot more anagrams than that. And we always kind of bonded over that. I've always liked wordplay. I like doing the hashtag wars on At Midnight and stuff like that.
You tweeted some really funny things in the past couple of weeks about redneck TV shows.
Oh, yeah.
You remember those?
What did I have?
You had a couple of things.
Redneck TV shows. The Unbreakable Kimmy Davis.
Yeah.
That was my favorite.
Wait, Kim Davis is the woman that wouldn't give people the marriage licenses. Is that her? Kim Davis.
Yeah.
Okay, the Unbreakable Kimmy Davis. That was right.
Which actually made their top 10 list, but someone else had also tweeted it, and they took it from their thing.
Ugh.
I have won the whole thing before a couple times.
So this is a contest.
They do... Well, do you know the show At Midnight?
Mm-mm.
It's Chris Hardwick's show, mm-hmm, the Nerdist. Mm-hmm. They do these hashtag wars nightly, and then they feature the top 10 on a list, and then they pick the best one from the night before.
Okay.
So...
Wait, what's the show?
At Midnight.
Okay.
It's a fun thing. I'm usually
like
sitting
it.
At a comedy club waiting to do a set, so
right.
It gives me something to do while I'm sitting there.
I
so
like this
another
one.
Redneck one was The Amazing Racist.
Yeah.
And then...
That was funny.
The other night it was Make a Movie Sicker, which I really liked Gonorrhea Girl, but it didn't get a lot of love. The one that I won with was actually, and it ties back into our phobias thing, I thought it was quite clever. It was Comic-Con ailments. So someone had done like the gangrene hornet, you know. And mine was xenophobia warrior princess.
Because
xenophobia is like the fear of,
that's
like,
good.
Worry about everything.
Yeah, xenophobia warrior princess. I like that.
I thought that was quite clever.
I like that.
And then the other one I did, I think I won
warrior
with,
princess. That's funny.
Hashtag rich people problems.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my dishwasher is broken. I think it's his arm. Where can I buy a new one? Which I thought was pretty funny.
That's pretty good. Yeah, I like those kinds of word things. Like, I was in our studio here at Actors Comedy Studio in class one day, and they have that sign up on the wall that says, "Let laughter happen."
Mm-hmm.
And I realized if you put an S on the beginning of laughter, it becomes slaughter.
That's funny.
And then I laughed the whole, like, for the next 3 hours to myself silently because nobody else really gives a shit. But
right.
That somehow felt weird and interesting and like, wow, just... you know, we put the laughter in slaughter, or, you know, like we put the infant in infantry, those kinds of things. Or we put the ass in plastic surgery.
No, I love that kind of stuff. Like, any kind of wordplay, my dad and I have always really enjoyed, and we do a lot of that just when we're talking and stuff. Oh, Clint Eastwood, Old West Action.
Old West Action.
Yeah.
There's the C is in action. Yeah, that's
Parliament
funny.
Is partial men.
Partial men, yes, I think I heard that one. But mother-in-law is woman Hitler. Yeah,
that's
I've definitely
really
heard that
one.
That's a really good one. See, now I think, to me, what I say is that there's got to be some science there.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not random, because it's exactly the same letters, and they're just rearranged. And somehow that feels mathematical to me. like a function box. You put in a 2 and a 6 comes out, or, you know, I mean, something specific. So I don't, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. All right, here are some other questions.
Yeah.
You have a somewhat quirky sleeping ritual. What is it?
Sleeping?
Sleeping. Sleeping or bedtime ritual.
Oh.
Yeah?
Sleepwalking?
Oh, really?
And sleep talking?
Oh, really?
Yeah. And sleep, so, tell me sleep about that. Cooking?
Sleep which, cooking.
That's, well, fortunately, I don't get fire involved usually, but I went through
sleep
a phase.
Microwaving.
Where it
hot pockets.
Would,
hot
I'd
pocket.
Wake up and it would look like I got in a food fight with myself in the kitchen.
Come on.
There were a couple of times that I prepared giant bowls of cereal. It was never like just a regular one that I would eat. Like I would get one of those big mixing bowls, make a bowl of cereal, get back into bed and fall asleep with it. One time it was on my chest. Uh-huh. And so when I woke up in the morning, it had spilled everywhere. And I thought I'd vomited on myself. I had one, well, probably my most embarrassing story ever was a sleepwalking. Did you hear this? Or
no.
Oh. I probably shouldn't tell this, but I think it's funny in retrospect, so
yeah.
I will.
Tell it here. Tell it here. We're going to have an exclusive, a worldwide exclusive.
I was dating a guy for a little bit in Chicago, and I was about 21, and he lived in a studio apartment. And one night, his brother and his brother's friend were in town, and they're military guys and kind of fit the stereotype a little bit, like kind of buttoned up. And we went out and had a few drinks, and we go back, and we're all crashing at his place. And, you know, so we're all in the same room, basically. There's a little kitchen area and a bathroom across from it. And I had to get up really early to go ride the next morning. So I leave at about 7:30. They're all still asleep. And then I get a text message while I'm riding around on a horse that says, "Do you sleepwalk?" So I write back. And this is back when text messaging, like, first started.
Right. Sure, it wasn't paged. They didn't page you. Yeah.
Yeah. I texted back. Yes. Ha ha ha. Why? Because no idea. And we used to talk a lot of shit. So when he replied, "You peed in my fridge," I was like laughing. You know, whatever. But then it was like, oh, and I started to have this like sort of flashback of like pulling out the vegetable drawer. Popping a squat and wiping with a paper towel and then closing it. And I was like, why would I do that? That's crazy town.
At least and you didn't wipe with a piece of lettuce, because that would have, it's right there. It could have easily happened.
Of course, because I have no morals. I texted back, "I was marinating your vegetables. Thank you." Apparently his brother had been in the bathroom and it must have been locked. So when I tried the door, and if you think about it, it's actually quite a smart alternative. Mess-wise, I mean,
because it just goes right into the drawer.
Yeah. So apparently he walked out of the bathroom to find me
squatting over the.
And, but but the funniest part. So I went back to Chicago a few years later. We're still good friends, actually. And I sit down at a table of people I've met him out at a bar, who I've never met, and he reiterates the story, and I'm like. Sweet, and I'm sitting there fuming, and I'm like, yeah, but you know the best part, Anderson? You still called me. So I win, and it's kind of satisfying.
So that's your quirky sleeping thing. You sleepwalk, you sleep talk, you sleep cook-ish.
I haven't done it as much recently.
But, you know, you go into the kitchen, you start to do stuff.
I, as a kid, always did stuff, and then alcohol made it worse.
Right.
Like,
because you're in a fuzzy zone anyway, and yeah.
But I've been sober for 9 years now, so it's not as bad, thank God. Because like in boarding school, I had to switch roommates because I was talking shit about my roommate in my sleep. I had no idea why we were switching.
So she said, "I can't. I got."
She
get
was
out
a
of
horrible
there.
Person, but
and yeah.
Apparently, well, I wasn't hiding my feelings as well as
you
were
hiding that. All right. Well, that I love that question. Mm. I ask that everybody that question. I have no idea what people are going to say. Some people say nothing, but the people that have something to say, it's always weird. All right, here's another question like that. As a child, you had an imaginary friend. Yes or no?
No.
No? No imaginary friends?
I mean, I lived in a very surreal world, but, like, mostly just because my parents and family always messed with me. But when you're five, you don't know that they're messing with you. Because, like, in order to get jokes, you have to have some base of knowledge.
Yes.
And you don't have that. So, like, I thought I was purchased at Harrods for the first part of my life.
Because that's what your parents told you.
Everyone was in on it. I mean, they kept a big Harrods bag in the front hall closet. And when I was bad, used to pull it out and chase me around the house and be like, you're going back. We're getting one that looks like you but doesn't talk.
And that was really terrifying.
Kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't until I was like, you know, I believed that, right?
And were they surprised that you believed it? Or did they realize
how
terrifying?
My dad was a little. He doesn't really get kids in a funny way. I mean, he's a great dad, but like once you can walk and talk, you're an adult.
Right.
You're just going to do all the things he does and like
understand what he understands. Yeah.
Which I think in some ways is cool. Like it is probably the reason I'm good with words because we would talk like grown-ups did, you know, but it's also a bit weird. I also thought I was Chinese and Ethiopian for way too many years. Told everyone that.
Until you were 17 or?
Well,
just from 11. Now, from me, 11. Wow.
Something.
You don't look either Chinese or Ethiopian,
remotely.
As far as I know.
Even albino, like, no.
No, you're not. But you would believe that till you were 11 or so.
Yeah. I mean, a lot older than I should have been.
Yeah,
I can't pinpoint. But, and all my childhood photos, my earliest memories are like my dad being dangled out of a window by Kevin Kline on the Fish Called Wanda movie set and like being escorted off set because I was upset about that because you don't get it when you're four. You're like, what are you doing to my dad? Let him go or don't let him go. Get him back inside. Weird.
Sounds like, it's a lot of weird stuff to deal with. So this is the dark part of, you know, like growing up with a practical joker. Or a joker, yeah, that you thought you came from Harrods and they would chase you around with the bag. That could be scarring. I mean, I can just imagine, like, wow, that might be really terrifying.
Or in kindergarten, we had to bring in a picture of our parents for show and tell, and my dad gave me one to take in, and I brought it in and presented it to the class, and he was in high heels and a dress and a wig. And, you know, to me, that was completely normal, but this was like the hoity-toity all-girls sister school to where the princes went. They did not have a sense of humor.
Right, right.
And I remember everyone else's were displayed on the class bulletin board, and they just took everyone's down because they didn't want to put mine up.
You brought your dad in a dress, yeah.
Yeah.
And that was normal. I mean,
oh, yeah. All my childhood photos, he's dressed as a monk, a cop, in his underwear, a bat.
All kinds
of things. Kangaroo.
I
mean, it's, yeah.
All right, now here's a question that you may not have an opinion about in any way, shape, or form, but I'm going to check because it's come up. I am headed to DragCon next weekend.
Fun.
Yeah, RuPaul's Drag. They did it last year here, and it was massively successful. I've never really dressed in drag. And, you know, as a straight guy who's going there for the first time, I'm like, okay, what? It feels risky, but I'm not exactly sure why. And then I'm having these thoughts like, what kind of woman do I want to be? Which is just not something I ever thought of before.
Right.
And it's not just dress. You know, I'm really, like, once you ask, what kind of woman do I want to be? Then you have to realize, oh, I'm also, like, what kind of man do I want to be in the world? Like, it's more than the costume, you know. Do I want to be a woman like Hillary Clinton? Or do I want to be a woman like Charo? I mean, anyway.
don't be like the latter.
I don't know if I'm going to. Anyway, I really wanted to dress like in a hijab or a burqa. Not for a whole day even, but it was... It just somehow now is implanted in my mind that women in the Middle East, you know, wear totally covering things. And a lot of them, like it. They feel protected. They like that experience. And I can imagine that at some moments I'll just get so totally overwhelmed about being there that I'll need to, you know, have a break. And I could cover up by being dressing in this Middle Eastern kind of full cover thing. But I don't know. Is that somehow offensive to women?
That's a good question.
Is it offensive culturally? I mean,
first of all, sorry.
I don't want to make fun of anybody. That's not
right.
The point.
I think you always have to be careful with those kinds of things because people are, I've learned through stand-up, and I don't really do any material that remotely touches on racism or... But I have one joke where I say the word racist. It's not a racist joke, but I watch everyone go,
yeah.
You have to be really careful and sensitive mm-hmm. about these things because there are some people looking for reasons to get upset.
That's true.
And it's usually not people who wear burqas. It's people getting offended on their behalf.
Yeah.
Which is, in my opinion, crazy. The reason that we have comedy is to make light of serious issues and deal with pain. I mean, it comes from that place. So,
right.
But part of me is like, that's a genius idea because it's so much less work than having to like paint your face and wigs and bras and not, you know, you just, your eyes and that's it.
Right.
And I remember at one point tweeting something about, I kind of wish I could wear a ski mask sometimes when I'm out running errands because I just get so sick of getting ready. And I'm like, but going to the bank would be difficult.
So it's just getting ready. You don't want to have to...
Well, it just gets tiring. Sure. I don't know how those women, you know, some of those like Beverly Hills housewife types do it every day because that's like 3 hours of hair and makeup. Like, I don't have time.
I can barely get out the door.
Yeah.
No, as a guy, you don't hardly have to do anything, and still.
Some days you're just like, oh, I don't feel like doing this.
Yeah.
So a
ski
mask would be great. But, like I said, if you wear it into the bank.
Yeah, that has other implications.
Yeah, you might
Well, you could wear a burqa. You know, the more...
They wouldn't make one long enough is the problem.
Well, that you might have to have a bespoke burqa. Yeah. But the more I've been thinking about it, like, wow, you know, these... I don't need to make any kind of political statement about the religious aspect or, you know, some people choose to do it. Some people think these women are doing this against their will. I mean, I don't have anything to say about that. On the other hand, I feel like these women are women in the world. And, you know, you can see a picture of something, but they should be seen, you know, in the company of their sisters. Roughly speaking. And in that way, it does feel like a kind of political or social statement. But it's not being critical about how anybody lives.
I just think
these are women that need to be seen and that, you know, need to be represented within this community of other women.
And I agree 100%.
Yeah.
I just know from my own experience that there will be people who will find a reason to find that offensive. Although, because you have an olive complexion, they may assume that, you know, it's part of your culture and therefore you would get away with it a lot better than someone like Carrot Top.
Oh, God.
I mean,
Carrot Top.
For a lot of reasons.
Every once in a while, Carrot Top somebody blurts out Carrot Top. And
I was just trying to think of the palest person.
Yeah, I know. It's just, he's still there. He's longevity. Longevity of Carrot Top. I had another question here, but it's a longer question, kind of. Anyway, I asked. So it's not offensive to you if I. Yeah,
not to me, but I'm also pretty much
women's issues. I'm asking women.
Unoffendable because, at this point because you become sort of desensitized from working in stand-up, and it takes a lot. And I like edgier humor. That's not a challenge, though. But it is very difficult to offend me.
All right. Well, here's the last question.
Okay.
I believe that. Most people, maybe all people, have some kind of a superpower. And it isn't necessarily super strength or the ability to see through a building, but it is this area in your life where you don't have to actually do any effort, that things just work. Something flows from you, and it might not be practical. You may never discover what it is.
I think I'm very intuitive or empathetic and kind of good at reading people. And I mean, I think that's probably a result of, A, growing up with a famous dad, and you get a lot of bullshit thrown at you from an early age, and I'm pretty...
From him or just from the world?
From the world.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Especially living in L.A., I'll meet people, and then they find out that my dad is who he is, and suddenly it's like a light switch comes on, and I'm like, you think I don't fucking notice that? Like... plus, he doesn't help me with my career, really. What do you think he's going to do for someone I just met? I don't know. But that, and also having moved around and lived all over my entire life, you know, I don't think I ever went to a school for longer than 3 years.
Like a military kid, you have to...
Only a kid of someone who gets married on a regular basis. Or two parents who get married a lot.
Yeah.
But I think it makes you perhaps read people better. I'm empathetic to a fault. Like, I pick up on other... Or I sort of take on other people's shit sometimes, which is not a great thing.
Right.
But it is helpful in comedy, certainly.
Yeah.
For reading people. But an audience is different because it's a big group, you know.
Now, I'm with you, but what got my attention is this business about the empathy and that you sometimes take on. That, to me, feels like a thing, because if it's... So, in a superhero context, right, these people have powers and they may not realize it, or at some moment it becomes apparent that they have it, and then you have a decision whether to use it for good or for evil. And that kind of quality of that kind of deep empathy, if you don't realize what is happening, you can get sucked up in it.
Mm.
On the other hand, if you recognize that that's something that happens for you and that you can do that, you can really use it as a performer, as an entertainer.
Right.
So
I just have to be wary of it, because if I don't have some time by myself to sort of decompress, it can stress me out.
Yeah.
And I feel guilty about things that I shouldn't be concerned about. You know, I'm kind of... It can be very draining.
Yes.
And I've learned as I've gotten older, I have to protect myself and put my own needs first sometimes, because otherwise I exhaust myself trying to help people with stuff that I really can't.
Right.
And I wind up running myself into the ground. And I'm kind of a little introverted by nature, which is... I have both introvert and extrovert, but, like, I need to nourish my introvert side or my extrovert side. It's very hard to go be funny when you don't want to be funny.
Oh, yeah. Just the last thing about that, I don't know if you're familiar with the Myers-Briggs personality thing.
I am. I haven't ever taken the test myself, but...
Well, one of the pairs of things, right, there are four pairs of this, is the introvert-extrovert.
Mm.
And the way they define it is to say that it has to do with what expends energy and what recharges your battery. So extroverts recharge when they're out with people, and it costs them energy to be on their own. And introverts is the opposite, right? You could be out, and that's great, but that is you spending energy, and you recharge at home, or you recharge when you're alone. And I can just tell that that's...
Yeah.
You're more that person.
Yeah.
Tell people you're an introvert, they say, oh, no, you're so out
I'm
there.
I'm social and out there, but a lot of comics are like that, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, a lot of comics are crazy fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That's me.
Yeah. Well, I would like to thank our very special guest, Camilla Cleese, for coming in today. If you would like to buy a Comedy Death Star coffee mug, you can email me at comedydeathstar@acsdigital.tv. I also want to sell rainbow unitards.
Those will be popular maybe at the drag convention.
It's only funny because it sounds like Rainbow Unicorn, but it's not, and it reminds me of Richard Simmons. Dylan Vigil is our producer and engineer. Our theme music was written and performed by Dean Mermel. You have been listening to Comedy Death Star, the official podcast of Actors Comedy Studio right here in Hollywood, USA. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. Thanks, Camilla.
Thank you. Bye.